guys, how's it going? Nick Campbell here, and with me as always is
David Steele,
and we are
Rhythm and Wit. Yes, this is a podcast where we discuss and explore the creative and artistic expressions of artists and performers in Oklahoma City and beyond.
Amen. All right. Today we have with us the very funny Matt Rainey. How you doing, Matt Rainey?
Welcome. Hey, I'm doing all right. What's up, y'all? I need more energy on the Rhythm and Wit. You guys have some synergy there, and I like that, but really just like maybe like a hand
you
thing.
Okay,
you guys.
Yeah.
Just the Rhythm movement. And Wit.
Like, Wild Stallions.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, dude. The only reason I do this pod is for that moment. Is just so we can say Rhythm and Wit together.
Just hype it up.
It feels good.
Hype it up.
Matt Rainey, how we doing?
So
I want to let everybody know, the comedian out of OKC, produce open mics, generally one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Sure.
And humble.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, am I supposed to agree or disagree?
So what the people are saying is, do you agree? Anyways, I just want to ask you, how'd you start in comedy?
Actually, started improv.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know that kind of gets stand-up comedy as kind of a... It gets a cringe reputation, but that's how I started. I had no social skills whatsoever, and I really didn't know how to talk to people. And I thought, well, gee golly, if I take an improv class, maybe I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. But then at an after party, they took me to a comedy open mic. And I saw Zach Ishikawa. Zach Ishikawa was the comic I saw doing open mic comedy where I said, I can do that.
Mm.
So the next week I signed up and I started doing it. And 10, 12, 13-ish years later, here I am.
Whoa, 13 years? 13-ish? That's a long run there.
It's a long run.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's built you as like a person? Did you get past those moments of awkward conversation?
I haven't done the big announcement like a stand-up comic is supposed to, but I've kind of quit comedy. I didn't make a big Facebook post about it, and I didn't do a big blow up because I wasn't mad at anybody or anything, but I've kind of just taken my foot off the gas, and I'm just kind of chilling. And there was a point I was trying to get to there, but I kind of forgot what it was.
Made you want to kind of hold back a little bit? You got something else you're chasing?
Oh yeah, I'm kind of done with it for a minute. I was hosting mics for a long, long time, and then I kind of realized, well, I think especially at this last mic I was running, I thought if I wasn't running this mic, I might not be doing stand up at all.
Like the only thing keeping you into it was running that.
And with comedy is one of those weird things or art really, where you got to get your reward in the here and now, because there's no guarantee of that the Netflix special isn't coming. You're not going on Comedy Central. You're not going to be on the big YouTube channel that everybody wants you to be on or that you want to be on. You just got to get it right here, right now. So if I wasn't at a certain point, if you're not feeling it, you got to just. Like, are you doing comedy out of habit? Are you hitting the mics every week out of habit? Or are you really trying to do something? And I didn't have a good answer for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to kind of take a step back. I mean, I think for me, I think about music a lot. Right now, I'm not playing music at all. And I feel like, well, it's not the time for me to be playing music. And I think that if it pulls me, I think it will pull me back because I love it. So, I mean, I'm going to find my way back to it eventually, but I'm not worried about, oh, I need to be playing music or being in a band right now or whatever. So I think that it's similar. I mean, for comics, it's like if you're not feeling it, just step away. And then if something brings you back, then you can come back. I mean, there's no real rules to any of it.
Yeah. You know, once upon a time, you know, a band would take a couple of years before putting out a new CD that you put in your Walkman. And now it's just if you're an artist, you better be TikToking every day. And I was like, that's another thing too, is I didn't want to be on, I'm not on social media anymore. And that's almost like quitting comedy.
Yeah.
Because how am I going to tell anyone about my shows? Right. I'm going to go door to door like, hey, like. I'm telling jokes at this bar. I don't.
Yeah, it's a big part of it now for sure. Being that, and that sucks too. Yeah, the social media thing we talk all the time about. But I mean, how important it is for the anything you do, you have to be like a marketer, yeah, that's marketing where, expert.
That's where I'm having a hard time right now. Is like I mean, it's almost like they kind of push you into, obviously they do because it works, but push you into being negative,
yeah,
or being in a coming from a place of lack. I feel like, but I have to use it and navigate it in order to put out my stuff. So here I am stuck playing tug of war with my time.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever it's like, all right, well, no, I feel that
yeah.
in a big way. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's frustrating because there's really no other way to get out there other than, like you said, I mean, mm-hmm. going out and meeting the people.
Yeah, sooner or later, we're all going to have to go back to the old-fashioned way of doing it, which is mm-hmm. just flyers and mm-hmm. bothering people and mm-hmm. barking, and I don't know. But yeah, I'm kind of done giving my attention to Instagram mm-hmm. because I put all this time and effort into promoting these shows. I get 15 likes and just fake DMs from fake hot chicks. And I'm just like, this is...
They're not
this,
fake. Yeah.
I send them money every week and they're always appreciative. That's a real girl, bro.
I'm supporting like four families right now.
Yeah.
I felt that though whenever, like Dave said, with music. I mean, I cut out of music years ago. Mm-hmm. And Dave's been at it but there was an internal struggle with, am I going to lose my identity? Like that kind of like, I put so much effort in this. Why, if I give up now, you know, was that wasted time, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I still myself, whenever I started this, I was like, this is just for the fun of it, you know? And I've gotten farther in this having fun than I ever did trying my ass off with music.
Yeah, I like what you said earlier is about like, it's about the here and now. It's mm-hmm. like, I mean, I think about this, I think in anyone's life, you have to enjoy the journey, you know what I mean? Like, if you're not enjoying the journey, you got to figure out how to change that because the end goal, I mean, is death ultimately. So it's like, what is the end goal? It's like, we're always looking, it's like, oh, if we can just get here, if we can just get this. But I feel like even if you do get that, that's not going to make you ultimately happy. It's mm-hmm. like, the happiness comes every day. You have to, you know, appreciate your time and what you're doing. Yeah. As you're doing it.
It's not just death. It goes further than that. It's being forgotten.
Yeah.
Utterly forgotten. Every joke you ever said, every goofball tweet you ever made, just utterly forgotten as the world moves on past, beyond you, without you.
Anyways, guys, keep listening. This is
comedy.
No, but I think you're right. I think you're right. I know I was joking, but I think there's a beauty to it, though, too, because there's like these moments, like in your room, in the improv, when you were doing new mic, it's new. You get moments that only you and those people have and that you'll remember, you mm-hmm. know, and you're like, or the best part, I remember jokes that people did in a room that will continually pop up in my life, you know?
Oh, yeah. You know? Just in your head or whatever.
Like, if I eat chicken wings, if I eat chicken wings, I think of Brandon Kilo every time because he has a little chicken wing where you, like, eat between the little bones and, and there's a few of those where it'll just pop up in my head and then those are the real gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the, like... one of my favorite, and it's just one of my favorite parts of your room is you go, don't talk about your dick. You can talk about anybody else's dick. Don't talk about your dick.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, that's such a fun way to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about the It's New open mic. I was trying to just come up with a cool rule set that wasn't trying to like lock people down on what they could and couldn't say. I think it's a pretty small ask that if you're going to be talking for 3 minutes, that at this particular mic, at this particular crowd, don't talk about your wiener, you know? It is a challenge for comedians. Yeah. I can't, like, what am I, what else is funny?
Right. That's what I like about that rule in particular. I think that you found a certain, like, very simple thing to say that, like, eliminates a lot of problems, you know, when you have mics and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wanted to glitch out the blue comedians for a minute. You know, it's the blue comics are always we say whatever we want. But you put them in a situation where they got to think around that for a minute, and you might see a couple of them sweating a little bit.
Yeah.
You might see a little bit of sweat.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to have boundaries, too. I think, in a way, it keeps you – I mean, it's like saying, I'm only going to use watercolors on this picture.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps you within, like, go, you can go do blue stuff at other places. I mean, that's the kind of thing, right? It's like you can do these other, and it depends on the environment that you're in, I think. I mean, you're directly impacted by the people who are around you. And it's almost like, are you being respectful? You know?
Yeah.
Like,
and that's a weird thing to think about when you're a stand-up comedian, because the whole thing, there's a little bit of disrespect in everything a stand-up comic does. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, where is that line though? And it's hard for me to sit there and draw that line. And I've had mics where there was no line. There was It's New is an anagram of New Shit, which is a mic that I used to run way back in the day. And it was late at night. There were no rules, and there are things that I'm so glad that no one ever recorded those mics.
Yeah.
The things that got said were nuts. Mm-hmm. But in that avenue, though, it was respectful, because we found a nice dingy bar to do it. We weren't going to be hurting anyone's sensibilities.
Yeah.
I do think that there is something about comedy that I've, you know, it's like, because I remember going to a show with you way before you even started. When we were in Denver visiting, my sister and your brother lived there also, but we went to a show there, and it was like the first real comedy show that I'd ever been to. And it was like, they took your phones and they gave you this little bag that they locked, that you got to keep your phone with you, but it was locked in this little bag that they unlocked so that you couldn't record. And I thought that was fascinating, because obviously it's like, they wanted to eliminate recording. But I was thinking about that afterwards, and it's like, you know, because in those rooms, it's like, it's a safe room for the comics to say what they want to say, and obviously to protect their material, but also just to protect them from being posted online. And maybe they said something a little off color, and, like, you know, it gets shared and they get canceled or whatever.
Good luck. Good luck. Yeah, it's just,
I don't know. But
I had a second phone in my pocket.
It's something about like this, the freedom of speech in that, you know, in that room, where it's like, you can say, you know, things that, you know, I think that there's something that you have to kind of find the boundaries, and you have to push the boundaries sometimes to find where, you know, where to fall back to.
And one of the funniest things that happened at that mic, and I forget the comic that did it, were like, so the big famous rule of no talking about your wiener. Well, one of the comics got on stage and talked about his friend's wiener for the entirety of the set. and it actually kind of made it okay. It made it like,
changed the perspective a little bit.
It was silly enough that I was able to be like, I'm gonna allow this. I'm gonna let this go.
Well, I mean, that's the idea of a comedian, is to be subversive, right? Yeah. I mean, to challenge. Yeah. And like you said, you're kind of, maybe you're being disrespectful, right? But the idea is to maybe find
an
idea.
It's like challenging people's thoughts, I think. Yeah. That's what I think, that ultimately comedy is, to make people think about whatever it is. I mean,
yeah.
So, but yeah.
How do you balance finding a good, like, balance the boundary? I think the boundary kind of moves a little bit here, you know, here and there too,
as society changes. Yeah.
But also as the room, as the people that inhabit it, I mean, the day, the weather, you know, it kind of changes how people feel and are. So how do you create that boundary? Make it almost like, all right, guys, we're really just all being nicer than normal, right? We're trying to be nice.
Yeah.
And then also not kill the creativity. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Like, because you don't want to hold back. We want to get into scary areas too. We want to figure out what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
We're not going to get there. Mm-hmm. We're going to fuck up. So is there an amount of forgiveness that where you're like, hey, man, look, that was crazy. We all kind of saw that. are we good? You know?
That's all great questions. Mm-hmm. And I think every mic should have a slightly different rule set, because every mic is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone talks about the wiener rule, but also that mic, It's New, I used to, I had a rule, no crowd work.
Yeah.
Was
it specifically if you didn't know the person?
If you don't know the person, don't try and crowd work them, because in that room, it's brightly lit in there, or brighter than it would be in a normal comedy club. Right. And so you see the person who's getting roasted, and it's a weird, like, and sometimes at the open mic scene, I feel like crowd work is a drowning man just reaching for anything.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm drowning. Everything I'm hitting is just, like, I'm getting nothing. Like, how about you? You say something funny, because I've got nothing up here.
Right.
And so, like, there's something else I just wanted to kind of take away from the comics. Like, how about, like, what happens if you don't do that? Mm. And but also, like, yeah, so I said, you can crowd work people that you do know, but I never saw that happen. no one ever tried to crowd work their friends. And so
interesting, yeah. I always liked that rule in particular. I mean, that was interesting because I think that if I do see that a lot, I mean, I think with crowd work or at shows, like comics will get up and roast other comics, or the comic that was just up, you know, they'll say something about it's like obviously they know each other, so it's like they kind of get away with a lot more just saying mean things or funny things, but it's like, okay, well, they're friends. You wouldn't necessarily say that to a crowd, a member.
Yeah.
Well, is there a difference between doing crowd work and playing with the room? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're almost, that's because I feel like I do a lot of crowd work. Like, it's more, the jokes are excuses to get up there and talk to the audience. Like, I want to, like, we're having fun, you know? Like,
you like to involve the audience in a lot of your sets.
And, like, I try to do playing with the room, and then crowd work, I think, is more individually, you know?
Yeah.
But I still did that at improv. I would be more like, right, guys? And then I point at Leo. And because I know Leo, you know, I kind of play within those bounds. But at a certain point, when everybody's laughing, you're like, "Uh oh, you guys are all my friends." So,
yeah.
And there's the malleability. There's the flexibility in, is this right? Is this wrong? Do the rules apply? They don't apply if they're funny.
Yeah.
If you're funny, so if you're being funny, do those, like, it. As a longtime comedian, what do you see? I mean, and if you don't know, it's completely understandable. What do you see that's the difference between somebody who can do that and make something funny, do the same thing as somebody else who is destroying a room, or, you know,
or like
being,
you said,
malicious,
drowning, trying to grab stuff?
Well, good. I'd say, and this, I'm not a crowd work comic, but what my observation is crowd work is a two-sided coin. So on one side is a lot of preparation, like unseen preparation, where you're really thinking through these jokes. And like, if I ask someone this, what's going to come out of this person's mouth? What could come out of that person's mouth when I ask that question? You know, and having a good answer for just about anything they throw at you. And that's it. So there's that preparation on that one side. And the other side is that improv element of just going with it. But even, you know, and I use the word improv, but even improv players, when they're doing improv games, there's a little bit of preparation in that too. They know how the games are working. They know what it is they're trying to get to and what it is they're trying to achieve. And so if you're doing that with your crowd work, you're good. Like, you might have a better chance of being successful if you're just, instead of just being like, well, what about you? What's your dick like? You know, like, that's is your dick weird? Like, that's not a good sign. You're just putting a dude on the spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Is your dick weird? Yeah, man.
That would be on the spot if I, you know, like if somebody asked you on a bus, is your dick weird?
Yeah.
You know, that's how I think about crowd work. That's how I think about crowd work. I'll think about it like this. Like, if I'm in public, would I have said this to someone? You know?
Hey, there's...
And then I can make, in conversation, I can make a joke usually. If I'm talking to you, I can usually get a joke out within 30 seconds. People hate it. But but I still do. It's fun for me, you know? Like, and I like to make people laugh.
That's the thing. It's like, when I see you on stage, it's like, you're not, you're just being who you are anyways. Mm-hmm. It's not any different, you know? And you've been practicing. So, I mean, you go into, the preparation, it's like, you prepare for this every day, every minute of your life that you're with other people. Yeah. That's your preparation.
And I want to say sorry to my mom, to my dad, to Liz, most of all.
And there's people out there who are just crowd work machines. They just have they have whatever that skill set is. They've got it down. Right. And if they're killing with it, I can't say shit.
I can't say shit.
But if you're not killing the crowd work, that's I'd just rather you die with your own material. You know?
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, preparation. I mean, you brought something up that's prepared. I mean, you're going to have a better shot. But if you're just going up there crowd working without any sort of prep, because you still have to know how to write a joke.
Yeah,
you know. My first stuff started out very much like that, where it was like, all right, I'm a husky boy. Who else is a husky boy?
Yeah.
You know? And then it would be like, woo! I was like, it sounds tired. You know?
Yeah.
And so you kind of play with that, and then it evolved into, where are my husky boys at? And they're like, yeah. I was like, and there's never a lot of them.
Yeah.
And nobody really likes to cheer about it.
Yeah, the self-identifying husky boys might not be as much as the actual husky boys.
So. Yeah. And so I was like, you know, they're tired or something. And so it's kind of the start of like, that's what it feels like to talk to a crowd. And then, but if you go in on that one person with that question, it's like, you're a Husky boy, right? And they're like, no. Yeah. Or I just found out now.
That's literally what they called me every day in middle school. You know? I just reopened this whole.
So this is a bad moment for you. Everybody laugh. But okay. No, I dig. I hope we get back into that a little bit because I do love the ethereal. It is a moving flagpole. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's a moving goal because you never like it could change at any point. The how quick was it that the Tesla box? What is it called?
Cybertruck.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was. Oh, this is an EV. We're gonna save the environment. And then the culture changed, and now it's the opposite of what it used to be. It represents, you know?
Well, the culture changed, and then the dude selling the trucks went up and threw a sick hile, and then a fucking...
Yeah.
This isn't a political podcast, right. But he things changed at Tesla. Yeah. I would definitely say Elon Musk, he changed the temperature in the room with his crowd work.
Really?
His crowd were going to go over with the rest of the crowd. Yeah. I really do think he was on so much drugs that when he threw it up, I think in his heart of hearts, he believed the crowd was going to throw it right back at him. And they didn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And no one's buying his trucks, and I'm not crying one tear about it.
No, I mean, well, he, you know, so you do that. You can expect to not be seen as much, right? Like, you should be kind of shunned. Right.
Get that dude out of here.
Yeah. And, you know, just use that as the example. Let's say that was an open mic.
Yeah, that's all. I was just thinking, you know? I was like, Elon, he should get into stand-up comedy and actually practice. Maybe he could learn a thing or two. But
sadly, I'm worried that some of his material would go over real well right now. Right.
Well, that's an interesting thing as well. Is the culture, the acceptance of a culture, what really dictates what's? No matter what the morals are.
Yeah.
You know, the culture itself, what's the culture? I mean, obviously we're in Oklahoma, but if you go to Seattle or something, obviously it's going to be a little different, but you can tell what the culture is here, you know, and where you're going to hit a landmine. Like, say you hit a landmine just saying something off about Trump, which would have hit in Seattle, but here it's a little different, you know, and so you're built by your environment, you know, and so what those... that flagpole moves.
It does. But I mean, then again, that's the pull of the crowd, which, you know, you can't. And yeah, the crowd's gonna swing like a pendulum. You know, like it wasn't but a couple of years ago that the things were felt a little more liberal than they feel right now. Like that pendulum's kind of swung back and forth, and it's, you know, it that's gonna always be changing. But I think a way that you can buttress yourself, or at least your material against that, is by trying to have your material be as close to the truth as possible. You know, you'll hear like you hear the cheesy stuff when you hear it, the really lazy stuff about like what races eat what kind of food, or what it is about like what's like being tall or short or fat or just whatever. Are you really telling the truth up there? I think that'll I don't know where I'm going with that.
I think I get what you're saying. It's like I think that that's important that not a lot of comics think about, but it's like just telling the truth. And I think it goes to something we talk a lot about, is just being true to yourself. I mean, if you're telling your truth, that's going to come across the most, you know, people are going to get that, whether they think it's funny or not, whatever, they're going to at least respect it.
And that's the trick of the comic, is like anybody can get up and stand the truth and say the truth. But, you know, to get up and say the truth and have a crowd of people laugh at it.
Yeah.
That's where the art comes in. That's where you really, the explanations stop making sense.
Because the laughter is acceptance. And it's small, you know, that's you, that you let me walk through the door of your brain.
As soon
as you laughed, you know, you accepted. Okay, well, that was funny. I mean, a prime example, one of my favorite things that you did at your mic, was the Will Rogers quotes.
I was
there for both times, and enjoyed. After the last mic, I went out and got a Will Rogers book watched the documentary on him. And
he was a hell of a writer.
He was adamantly against government.
Yeah.
And spoke about it daily new stuff off his hip. He would just pull a newspaper out. He was writing, what, 3 columns every day,
yeah.
you know? Mm. And so he was very prolific, one. But two, he was the voice of the people, basically, back then. I'm sure you know this. This is for all the kids.
What was funny is, like, people, they didn't, like, you know, and I didn't really know who Will Rogers was all that much until I started putting all those quotes in a jar. And really, that whole thing started really with Rodney Dangerfield jokes. So my favorite Rodney Dangerfield jokes, I printed them out. I cut them into little strips, and I put them in that jar. So, because sometimes, you know, like, I think, especially new comedians, like, they'd do better if they're working with better written material. But we tell the new comics that they have to write their own material. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, is like, I guess you could just, like, if you read someone else's jokes, you don't have to worry necessarily about the writing. You just have to worry about the delivery.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave like, almost like training wheels for new comics.
I like that. That's really cool.
I also had a concept, and I never pulled it off, where I wanted, if you're going to do other people's material, you had to put on a yellow safety vest to let everyone, just to designate that you are indeed like doing that. Other people's material.
Yeah.
You're stealing jokes, man. That's a Mitch Hedberg. It's like, yeah, he's got the vest on. It's okay. Yeah.
Well, the best part is you're stealing jokes from a guy who's dead, so he's not going to come get you.
If you're going to steal them, I can't. Every time I hear a drama about an open micer stealing material from an open micer, I want to scream, because, like, there's dead comedians that you can steal all your jokes from.
Yeah.
crying out. Like, what? Just steal their jokes. They're not going to come after you. Right. Like, Henny Youngman's not going to come after you for stealing his knock knocks. Yeah. Like, come get him.
Well, I said, somebody recently told me that. They were like, man, this dude stole my joke. I was like, first one to record wins.
Where's the proof?
Yeah, put a date on it. Mail it to yourself. You can't. That's how.
Absolutely.
We are now taking donations for to help support Rhythm and Wit. It's called buymeacoffee.com/rhythmandwit. And that is where you can go and just donate any number, any amount. I think that what they do is, it's called Buy Me a Coffee. You can buy us 1 cup of coffee. Costs $5, so you can just donate $5, and that will maybe buy one of us a coffee.
Yeah, so we'll sip on it together.
We'll split it. So you can do that, or you can buy us 10 cups of coffee if you wanted to. So, I mean, that's like a $50 donation, and then that's all goes there. You can leave us a message on there, and if you do leave us a message, we will certainly read it on the air, and thank you for your support. And any of the money that we take from Buy Me a Coffee, or any donations at all, we are going to use to put back into the show, whether it's buying new equipment, maybe some mics or cameras or lights or anything like that, or maybe even promoting and just trying to grow the audience, because that's something that I'd like to get into, is, you know, buying some ads and things like that to try to grow our audience that way.
Absolutely.
And of course, that costs money, so we would love it if you could support us. If you have the means, please go to buymeacoffee.com/rhythmandwit. Rhythm and wit.
But the so I wanted to ask longevity. So you've been doing it for this long, and, you know, you say you're kind of not going to, I mean, you're kind of taking a break, but not bowing out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a, you've developed these skills over a while. Have you taken a break before?
Yeah, you know, I think the trick is just don't tell people you're doing it, so they don't think that you fell off or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just take your break, and they didn't miss you. You'll come back in about a month or two, and you'd be I'm already doing the thing where I'm sitting and thinking about how I would put a certain bit together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I can't.
Like, yeah, you can't help it. Really.
Yeah. So with a straight face, I can't tell anyone I've quit comedy. Yeah. I'm just smell you later right now.
Mm-hmm. But that's good. I think that happens. I mean, I see it a lot. I mean, we've only really been in this community for a couple of years, but it's like you already see people kind of drop away and then they come back. But it's like we need that, because it's like life happens, stuff happens. You gotta take care of that's more important sometimes.
Yeah, no, nobody can crank the content machine forever.
Yeah, for sure.
The sun's gonna run out.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, just us. A great example is just like living. I want to get out there. But right now the kids are getting out of school. You know how that is.
Yeah.
We got orchestra, we got volleyball, we got all the final stuff happening.
Yeah.
And then we go into the parties and all this stuff, and then trying to work as a human. and make it and not be buried under bills. Anyways, the yeah. And then yeah. you're like, I'm going to go out and do 5 minutes at 6 o'clock for an hour.
Yeah. And I'm going to wait an hour and a half to do it. Too. Yeah. Just like, what?
I'm going to think about it all day and let it get in my feels. Yeah. And yeah. So I can see the difficulty there. But whenever you're looking at one, your brain kind of just works like that now, right? Because yeah. you practiced yeah. it for yeah. so long.
You do it so long. Or when you see someone do some public speaking and you know they don't know how to work a mic.
Yeah.
Like, this dude does not know how to talk. Like, I'm worried if I'm too quiet into the mic right now. But, like, when the guy is whispering, it's like,
yeah.
Get me out of this funeral. He doesn't know how to talk.
Yeah.
This guy does not know.
Well, that was, I went to the... Not knocking. My daughter's orchestra teacher is amazing.
Yeah.
Before I say anything.
Big fan of the show. We love him.
Yeah. And she's the best. But there's... I think going up in front of people is very, like, you know, the potentially embarrassing, but never really. You know, if it's not memorable...
It's literally one of people's biggest fears
yeah.
in
yeah.
life.
Public speaking.
But if you do it, it's not... It's like jumping out of a plane. As soon as it's over, it's over.
Yeah.
Right? And then most of the time, if you say something dumb, nobody's going to remember it. They're up their own ass. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They're just going to be like, oh,
they're on their phone. It's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah. So I was on my phone at this orchestra concert. But no, we're standing up there, and she's doing her thing. She's like, she does really great at conducting. She does all this stuff. And then she wants to say that she appreciates the kids, and she does a really great job. But she just over and over, I'm very proud of them. I appreciate them.
Yeah.
And she's just nervous. You could see it. I was like, you teach the worst crowd every day. You teach
yeah.
kids
yeah.
trying to learn an instrument, you know, and then, but you're looking at parents and you're going like, oh, I don't want to, it's mm-hmm. like, but she just hasn't had the practice of yeah. being in front of that crowd in that room. And right. then mm-hmm. so many rooms and feeling, you know, like she didn't know that it didn't matter what she said. You know what I'm saying? Like, in general, none
I mean,
of it
you
does.
Say, yeah, she could, like you said, just say it once and mm-hmm. yeah, we got it.
But there's yeah. a, because, well, I mean, I'm sure you know, the more you repeat things, the less important it comes off, right? And not that I'm saying that it wasn't. It was just like these little tricks that yeah. you do whenever you're up there, you're like, oh, she shouldn't. Oh, you gotta talk into the mic.
Yeah.
You gotta talk into the mic.
Like, you know.
Look at us. Don't look at them. What are you doing? Yeah.
Well, for me, there's so many times where there's someone public speaking, and it's like, who's got the light right now?
Yeah.
Is anyone timing this? Because this dude's been up here for like 15 minutes, yeah. and he needs to wrap it up.
Yeah. There was one guy that I watched my daughter. They did a thing for the veterans. You know, they
yeah.
and they had a guy come speak, and he was so good. He was in his, you know, just an old, like 70-something-year-old mm-hmm. guy, and he was just like, yeah, I've been through a few wars, and then he had like a few jokes and stuff, and then he was like, but then, you know, at the end, he brought it together and made it tearful, and then it was like, and then you guys too can support your country, you know? And then, you guys have a good night. And then just, bah!
Yeah,
you know? And you're like,
time.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
You know? What is that? What happened? I want to go join now. You know what I'm saying? Like, flat-footed as hell. I don't give a fuck. I'm about to be Captain America in this bitch. Anyways.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So she did good.
That's the difference.
Don't yeah. you want to carry a loaded gun into a foreign country where you're not wanted?
Well, I mean, I think it's the heart of it that we're
yeah.
but
I'm playing. Yes, for the
troops. You want to carry? I wonder what his stipend is. But anyways, happy Veterans Day. Happy Memorial Day.
Jack Tapp, we're celebrating with you.
Yeah. But yeah, longevity. Okay, we'll get back to that. So over the time of doing it, how have you evolved? You know, you took breaks, you came back.
Yeah.
What has evolved in you that now, like you said, you kind of just do and you don't even have to think about it? Or as a person, okay, take an example. For me, I better understood myself because I had to start diving into myself because I was right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then now I would not be where I am without a full understanding of, better understanding of who I am, for better and worse.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, oh, shit, that's dark inside of me. I didn't know that was there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of your answer there is when you start writing that material, and I don't think if anyone who's not writing to get up on the stage and talk about it, they might not be exploring some of that real dark stuff and yeah, just finding out like, oh wow, I didn't know that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing it, you know, there's been stuff in journals I've written where I'm just trying to get to the bottom of what it is I'm feeling about mm-hmm. a certain topic, like. I hope that, and I'd be riding on I'd be taking the trolley train to JJ's on Thursday, just thinking like, I hope a cop doesn't stop me and look through this journal, because if he looks through the stuff I'm writing right now, how would I defend any of the stuff that I've just written down? And I know I'm going to tear these sheets of paper and throw them away because I just don't need I don't need these words in my life
to be in existence.
But yeah, I think I'd say that, like, you know, maybe that's kind of what I was looking for in comedy, is just trying to get to, like, what's going on underneath all these weird thoughts in my brain? Like, where like, where do they come from? What are they? What's, I don't know if maybe I'm putting too much gravity on my fart jokes. but yeah, another comedian would say, like, that's stupid. Just make the crowd laugh.
Yeah.
And I think, and I don't know. They're both.
I don't know. What do you like? Do you like it when things are more heartfelt? And when they come, whenever somebody, here's the thing. I think the fart jokes are great if they're bringing levity to something difficult.
Yeah.
You know?
I like the fart jokes when I know a little something more about the person after the end of the fart joke.
Hmm.
Yeah. Right? I don't know where I'm going with that.
The fart is the deliver. This is how you get to see me.
Yeah.
Is the fart joke.
And everyone's got the farts, and everyone's embarrassed by their own farts, but everyone's farts, I guess, are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, what's that dude's farts like? What is it? What are his farts like? And if he gives me something that I've never heard before that's really, like, cool, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think
it's all about what you consume.
It could be like, you know, if you're saying something about yourself and then you give it that punchline, which is like the fart or whatever gross thing that makes it kind of sticks in people's minds a little bit more, to where it's like it makes it more memorable, right? So it's like you are passing along information about yourself with that intention of, like, sticking it, making it effective.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't really. It's all ethereal. People like things for different reasons, right?
Right.
When you really try to pin down what's funny? Like, what does it mean to be funny? What does it mean to, like, the sooner you start trying to pin it down, ethereal is the word, because it just slips away.
You didn't deserve it. That's what it feels like whenever you're like, oh, I'm gonna make this funny, and it goes away. It's like, no, you weren't doing it right. Yeah. You were holding the stand too hard.
Just hold it too
and
hard.
It just. And then I think I'm a very big believer in the muse. The muse is like God, collective consciousness, you know, as far as like the idea of, like, I got to sacrifice my time for the muse, right? Yeah. I'm sacrificing my life, right? And so if I do that enough, she gives me these really great ideas that I have to work with, right?
Do you think God is pleased with your stand-up comedy?
No. No. But the muse is. But the muse is. Yeah, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, that's why there's a trinity, right? So the others can't see what each other are doing.
Yeah. They got a 2 out of 3 votes on it. We're going to go. We'll go vote on it. We'll be back.
We'll let the watermelon crushing guy do his thing. All right, we'll give him some ideas. Who's that guy?
Gallagher.
Gallagher.
That's one of my favorite comedians growing up. One of the highest grossing comedian of the 1980s.
Big Couch?
Which one?
The Big Couch. When
he
the one?
Yeah, put the trampolines in the big couches and all whatever. We recorded it off HBO. Mm-hmm. I had the VHS tape. I watched that and Harry the Hendersons on repeat.
Yeah, he's probably the first comic I can remember ever watching on TV, you know, besides like maybe Jay Leno or somebody like on that. But but like actually stand up specials was definitely Gallagher.
And our household had a ritual that whenever, because I loved watching stand-up comedy as a kid, but whenever the comedian started getting too dirty or too dangerous or whatever, my parents would immediately change the channel. Mm-hmm. It's like, what was he talking about? and I almost, like, wonder, is that the reason I became a comedian?
Yeah.
Is just to kind of, is that what it was? Is just, like, the changing of the channel and me not knowing what that person said somehow put me on that direction? To save my own things that if I was on TV, my parents would change the channel on me.
Well, did that make you want to write? What did he say? Like you were trying to finish it. Yeah. You were like, I wonder what that went to. And so you just kind of messed around with it. You went to school. Like, did you see that? Comedy Central Presents with Dan Cook. Did you see?
What I would do is I would check oh man, here comes old man Rainey. I would check out the TV guide. I would pull out the paper printed on paper. Mm-hmm. What was going to be on TV and at what time, and check to see, because they'd always play it again at like 2 or 3 a.m. So I'd get up at 2 a.m. and watch some dumbass Howie Mandel special from the 80s on HBO. I and maybe maybe that put me on the direction that I went in without even knowing it.
Yeah. Well, it was important enough that you had to search it out.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, you would have went back to playing with Jax or whatever you guys did in the old days. But but I had a very different upbringing. My parents used to watch South Park with me.
Oh, yeah.
And
really?
My dad introduced me to Hudson and Landry. It's an old 1950s radio show that was like, it was, you know, they had the Prospectors. And it was, if you look it up, it's really good stuff. But and also social commentary for back then on radio.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not familiar. I have to check that out.
Yeah. Hudson and Landry, super funny. But also, you know, my dad would tell me risque jokes because he would, and my mom was, they were all jokers, you know, and they, he introduced.
Your dad was construction?
Yeah, he was construction. Okay. And Navy. Okay. Yeah. So,
okay.
So he was like, check this hair lip joke I got. And now he doesn't do it because, I mean, he's not allowed. Yeah. But, no. But he's a, they all kind of did that for me. They, they introduced me to Eddie Murphy and Louis Anderson, Sinbad, and all these. I mean, yeah, David Sinbad, and I used to listen to Sinbad
on repeat. The cassette tape.
Yeah.
Sinbad was cool.
Yeah. And, but they would sit there with me and watch it. Yeah. They would. Yeah. They were like, hey, don't turn that on until I get in there. I got to make the popcorn.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's, because me, I would have to hide out in my back bedroom and watch The Simpsons with my finger on the button to change the channel if someone came in.
Yeah.
Because The Simpsons were not allowed in my household. Yeah. The comedy cassettes I had access to, cassettes on cassette, was Jeff Foxworthy, Bill Engvall, like just the Here's Your Sign. I haven't listened to that in decades, but I'm worried that if I listened to it, I would know every word.
Yeah.
and I don't know if Jeff Foxworthy is the best comedy teacher you could have, but that's the one I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got through it without telling any redneck jokes, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Yet.
Not yet, yeah. But honestly, like, I need a gimmick like the "You Might Be a Redneck" if like he rode that gimmick to sleep. He just all the money.
Well, he did a few. I'm a big Jeff Foxworthy fan. Again, that was right along there. My dad, his grandpa, used to have the Jeff Foxworthy. Our whole line of family was a bunch of jokesters and assholes. Mm-hmm. But he had the coffee table book. I smoked weed. I don't know what's wrong with me. But the coffee table book where you could like flip through it, and then I would go through it and try to remember it, and then be like,
yeah.
All right, and then I'd go run to the neighbor and then be like, yeah. While my dad was like, we're supposed to be cleaning the yard here, dude. You know?
That was your first open mic. Yeah.
But I remember, me and dad would trade jokes. I mean, just silly stuff, you know? And I think you get there. I think if it wasn't for that, I would have found it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I always, like, you know, I can talk shit about stand-up comedy, but the one good thing it really did for my life is it's just this weird, like, gutter is the wrong word for it, because that sounds too gross, but it's this catch-all that just catches all these weirdos. Mm-hmm. And I have friends from walks of life that I would never, you know, hanging out at Marty Johnson's house, just looking around, and he's talking politics to me, and it's like, I would never be here. If it wasn't for stand-up comedy, I can't think of any other avenue that would put me in this guy's house right now, eating like shark steak. Like what? Huh. I don't want to talk too much shit about Marty Johnson, but he had like cuts of steak made out of shark, and I was like, that's, I gotta try that, and it was good.
Oh man,
comedy is weird like that.
Well, it'll take you where you don't want to go too. So that's nice.
Oh, it'll put you on a Greyhound bus to Chicago. It'll be awful.
That what you did?
I've done it. Wow. I've done it a couple of times, mm-hmm. just to do some open mics and comedy will beat the crap out of you if you let it.
If you let it, that's a good point, man.
And I never did the deal where, like, you know, every comic has that story about sleeping in a car. I never did that, but man, I came close.
Yeah,
I came close a couple times just because they trying to just squeeze a nickel out of this business is such a hassle.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you want to get good at it, you have to do it full time, but you're not getting paid full time.
Mm-hmm.
You just it's mileage may vary.
It's a labor of love for sure.
Absolutely.
Now I've slept in my car for electrical work too, so it's not like it's not just for comedy. Yeah. Like, you can sleep in your car for any reason.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons.
There's a lot of reasons. So don't be ashamed of sleeping in your car. All right. Yeah, sometimes it's a 22-hour shift and you got to get up in 7 hours. Yeah. So.
But, yeah. Well, I was curious. I don't know if you've got this on your list or whatever, but what are like some of the shows that you've done that are like places you've been? Is there any stories or anything that come to mind?
Oh,
Doing shows or doing comedy anywhere?
I guess the best show I ever got booked for was opening for Mick Foley. I had just started. I think I was like 2 or 3 years in the game, and I just happened to have a whole bunch of bits about pro wrestling.
Yeah,
because that's the thing I was actually interested in. I have my life is like a line graph of you can chart happiness by the amount of pro wrestling I'm watching. The more pro wrestling I'm watching, the less happy I am. It's like a direct correlation. And so at that point in my life I was watching a lot of pro wrestling, and I got booked to open for Mick Foley, who's a pro wrestling legend, and then Jim Ross, who's he's a pro wrestling legend and an Oklahoma legend, like, so he was on the show, and I couldn't believe it.
And that was here?
Yeah, that was over at the fairgrounds. And nice. And I've been chasing that dragon for a while. I opened for Brad Williams at Breakdown Comedy Club, and that that opportunity was amazing. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing opportunity to do that. And and then there's that, and then there's also I forget who he was, but some goober from California was doing this club in Arkansas, and for whatever, I knew the guy who was booking it, and I ended up opening for him, and he hated me, and I didn't like him much either. But that taught me more about comedy than any of those good shows ever did.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know? And I don't regret that show at all. Mm-hmm. There's the shitty club shows. There's fun to be had.
Yeah.
There's fun to be
had. There's always something to learn. I mean, that's something we've learned from, I think, Julie Drake or somebody told us, like, you'll never learn anything from doing a good show. You learn from the bombs and the bad shows that you have.
Yeah. Just patting myself on the back after a good show. Yeah.
But
that's interesting.
A bad show is a pebble in your shoe. You can't get, you just got to think about it for a while and, like, what happened? What did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. Where was I lacking?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You find out.
Yeah, I think that's the deep dive. That's like that dive into yourself that kind of you have to reevaluate. Where did I mess up? Because it goes, was me?
Yeah, was it me? It's like, was it me? You were the last dude on an 8-person bill, and everyone was drunk and tired, and like Doug Stanhope wouldn't have done well at the end of that set. I don't know. I'm not. Why am I talking shit about Doug Stanhope?
Because he's great.
He's great. Yeah,
that's why.
Right. I do think about that when I'm in a real shit room where nobody's getting any traction. I'm like, what if like a real deal, just pick your name comedian walked in the room. Like, would he have a chance in this room right now? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm like, I think he could do it. But other times I'm like, nah. Everybody's bombing in this room. Everyone's dying tonight.
He's not going to turn this church around.
Yeah, dude. Not happening.
No, that's usually whenever I start crowd working, because like I'll do like
nothing else has worked.
It's like I did two good jokes, and then I tried to be nice. y'all's fault. No,
but I think that is something that I've seen you do a lot, and I think I'm sure we've talked about this on this show. But it's like whenever you start to involve the audience, sometimes like the audience just isn't there or whatever. It's like they're not. You know, it's like you have to get them involved for them to be more aware and to actually be a part of the, you know, be interested in the show and what's going on. So
it's the fear of getting called on.
Works. Yeah.
It's the like, oh shit, he's gonna look and talk to me. And now they have to pay attention because they got to be ready.
I don't know.
And then you throw out, once you see those eyes go, oh shit, then you go, all right, let me try another joke.
Yeah.
You know, kind of
get their attention.
I just need to go, are you a Husky boy? All right. I went to Walmart the other day. But that's kind of, I figured that out when I was doing Lively, because I was hosting. I got a lot
of. That was a free show, too. And a lot of people would show. That's something that, you know, we talk a lot about, but it's like free shows versus like paid shows. Mm-hmm. People are more invested because they have money invested in the show.
And bar shows are pretty. Yeah. It's tougher because, you know, like you said, it's brighter. You can see people. Yeah. There's no. Like, the honed focus is really where comedians get their power, right? Otherwise, absolutely. You got to draw them in yourself, which is way harder.
Yeah.
But the. In that room, when we would get people in and I would host, I would have to host and bring them around. It was like I was just starting out too, which was tough. I was reading a lot of books. But what I learned was if you could talk to somebody, it made this guy go, oh, shit. Like, yeah. Like, it would have to look and be like, and then you'd look at him, and then they kind of, and then you go, not you. You see what I'm saying? So you kind of play with them a little bit just to kind of make them feel like they were going to be next, and then kind of like a warning shot almost. Mm-hmm. And then you could do a joke. If they laughed, you had their attention. Then you do another one. If they didn't laugh, you're like, we got to find another one.
Yeah.
Get you guys. It's like a teacher.
Yeah.
Almost, you know, like how a teacher gets a class going.
It's, you got to build the momentum.
Yeah. And then once they're there, you're like, okay, they're paying attention. But it's hard to be more important than a beer.
Yeah.
You know,
or their phone. A football game when it's happening right above your head.
Right. Yeah.
That's a tough one, dude. Yeah. That's all crowd work for me. That was
just screw it. We're going.
Yeah. This episode of Rhythm and Wit was brought to you by Campbell & Son Electric, Oklahoma City's trusted one-truck electrical contractor with over 20 years of experience in the field. Whether it's upgrading your home's electrical service, troubleshooting issues, or tackling small commercial projects, Campbell & Son Electric delivers top-notch work with care and attention you'd expect from a family business. Servicing areas like Dell City, Edmond, Yukon, Mustang, and beyond, they're your go-to for reliable expert service. Need help with your next project? Visit CampbellAndSonElectric.com today and get it done right the first time. Campbell & Son Electric, brightening Oklahoma, one wire at a time. Okay. So with the longevity, I wanted to ask this. Do you feel like you preserve your skills whenever you kind of take a break, or do you lose a little bit? Are you so practiced now that you can kind of get in and out?
I'm rusty right now. Yeah. I know, like, I think I could get some laughs if I walked up onto a stage, but I know, like, it's just I'm not at fighting weight. Mm-hmm. I would have to, like, I got to sit down and do some writing. I got to, like, I don't have a set list together. I'm kind of just, I'm loosey-goosey right now. Mm-hmm. I could do I could rock a 3-minute set, but then after that, the cracks are going to show without, like, you know, without the
practice.
The prep. Yeah, the practice and the prep.
I mean, I think about this all the time with open mics and the importance of open mics. We did an episode, you know, I think that's one of the things we like to do is periodically have an episode of this show where we just talk about all the current mics that are going on, because people, that those are so important to this craft that you have to, that's where you practice. I mean, you have to have that. So... I think it's super important, obviously. Like, and I think that most comics know that, but yeah.
Well, you say right now you're a little rusty, but when we're at improv, like I said, that was one of my more favorite mics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're so creative with it wasn't just a mic.
Right.
You had challenges. You had different comedians challenge you, like almost like you're wrestling
the belt. Yeah.
Yeah. It came from my love of pro wrestling.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The comedy championship belt. The Mina Smart. She walked away from the whole show. She's the champ. She's the it's new champion for life.
Yeah. For life. For undisputed. Life. Undisputed.
She earned it.
But she or that idea of it made it makes it fun. It makes it involving your doing something different.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that you do even with your advertising for your mic. Like whenever I saw your mic, you could see it wasn't just, oh, here's some comedians. It was like, this is the fun you could be having.
Yeah.
You know, like I would be like, oh my God, I keep missing out. Like that's what I felt like, you know? and I feel that when I'm there too, it's like, man, I can't believe I didn't come all those times. Yeah. I wasted it. When you said you were going to quit, or you were done with that mic, I was like, fuck.
I was the same way. I'd only ever made it twice out there. I was like, man, I used to go out to, there was a couple of mics I really liked going to, Fairweather Friends.
That back mic rules.
I remember you hosting that once or twice for sure, but. I would go there every week. It was just a fun time to, you know, and yours, it's new, was similar to that. It's like, I should have been going there every week just to hang out because it was just a fun group and fun time. Every
so can
week.
You go back? Can you just, can you just do it again?
I'm of the opinion now. It's like, man, like I've that whole mic, the only reason that I did It's New was because in that same building 10 years ago, the very first open mic that I ever ran was, it was a coffee shop at the time called District House. And so I ran an open mic called Public Access for a couple years, and I handed it off to Alex Sanchez and Will Ogletree, and they did amazing things with that mic. It actually had its last, That mic actually had its last episode like a year or two ago.
Yeah, I remember that whenever he was doing it again at a couple years Paramount ago. Room, I yeah. think. I never made it out there. It was like Sundays or something like that. But
yeah, but yeah, when he was running at the Paramount, it still had the direct lineage from the mic that I ran at a District House. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it... When Kendon at OKC Improv contacted me about running a mic in that room, it made perfect sense. I was like, it felt like me kind of like closing like the final chapter on that book, whatever that book is. Like because I still had a lot of weird open thoughts about that mic and what I should have done with it, what it could have become. And as my chance to really is like, okay, we'll just do that and finish it up. And now that I've done it. Maybe the other people that came to the mic and was inspired by it, maybe they can do something that's a little bit different and outside the norms, you know, an open mic can be more than just a sign up sheet in a bar. You can do some cool creative stuff with it, and it's just out in the open. Like I steal my ideas, steal them,
keep going. Yeah. Do the same thing.
put a comedy championship belt in your open mic. Yeah. Adrian Corwin, still like a belt at Othello's. Make it happen. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is nobody, if somebody makes a championship belt, people want it.
Yeah. Bad. They want to win.
That.
Bad.
I feel like a couple times where there's people who are going up for the belt and they're like, wait, what happens if I actually win? It's like, you're the champion. Like, oh, I don't want that. I was like, what? Why? Like, yeah, I don't want to win. It's like, okay.
Well, then you go sit down. We're trying to have fun up here, dude.
Yeah. But the people that did want it, man, it made the excitement.
There's a responsibility, I think, to, you know, it's like you have to, if you win the championship, then you have to defend it.
Then you got to act like a champion.
The belt, it needs a fighting champion. Right. That's what it needs. Some part-timer. and Tamina Smart's credit to all the champions. They came in, they did the work. Cody Troutman came in week after week. Mina Smart, Will Davis. I'm forgetting some, but big dick.
I thought Will had it. I thought Will had it, man. I really did.
Dude, we had like weeks of things planned out because I thought that Will was going to hold that belt for a long time.
Yeah.
And so I was already like 3D chessing it. Like I don't know, four or five steps of how I wanted to book that. And and then Mina came in and just out of nowhere.
Because she's pretty new. I remember seeing her, like I think her first ever open mic was when Martin Duprost was doing the
Sailor
in the Dock. Yeah. I was at one of her first ever open mics. And it's like she's always had something, but obviously now it's like elevated. So it's great to see her continue and get so much better so quickly, even.
Yeah, dude. And well, then I think the improv gives you that space. Like I said, it was the environment was something one, you had to do it's new stuff. You had to do new stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And I built, if I didn't do that mic, I wouldn't have like five or six bits right now.
Yeah.
Just because
that's
it's like,
great.
Well, I can't do my old stuff.
Yeah.
Let me just try this. You know? And a lot of times that's all it takes to bring life into it.
Yeah.
You know, things you don't even think is funny.
And that was the whole deal. Like, so the It's New draws its lineage from another mic called New Shit, which is an anagram. And it was all about just like no old material. That's the other thing about open mics that I hate is going up to and seeing funny people do the same material every single week.
It's like, you know that works. Why are you... you know,
it's like you're not...
If it's already, you know, it's already a joke. You've already developed it. You're right.
Yeah, you're doing time, but you're not working bits.
Right.
And that's a trap to fall into at an open mic.
On average, how long do you think someone should run a bit? Like, okay, I've done it. All right, you go ahead.
run it till it's ready.
Yeah.
I mean,
it could be different.
I mean, you do it at the mic, you're going to find, you got to do it four or five times to find a couple different angles that you want to do. You want to do it a couple of times at a showcase just to see, like, how does it feel with a real crowd? I'm not one of the guys that, like, I give up on it the second it bombs. Some comics are like that, and there's a point to be made about that. But, you use it till it's ready. And what's problem is as soon as you got a joke that's hitting, it's on its way to being a dead joke. You know, they all have lifespans. And so you'll do that joke that worked for 3 years, worked every time like a charm. It was your closer for a while. And you do it and it's just no traction. And what happened? Where did the funny go? Can you point to where it went?
It's just gone.
Y'all use cassettes?
And you look at a bunch of like or you know, there's nothing like going to a comedy club and seeing some you know, a comedian in their 60s doing Seinfeld impressions of Kramer and Elaine and George, and you're looking around like there's no one here watched that show, like these are kids, like why you know. I just everything's got a lifespan.
That's an interesting thing that I never don't really think about that. I mean, I don't practice stand-up comedy, so I wouldn't know, but as far as that lifespan of a joke, that's interesting to think about.
Yeah, they all have mileage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What else you got?
Oh, okay.
we got off of that point. But
oh,
also,
sorry. Yeah.
So the it's new. Like one thing I don't really talk about a whole lot is the whole idea that the mic didn't have a microphone, and the whole reason that came about was just me trying to work around some limitations that I had. Because what they were wanting me to do was they assumed that I was gonna like need a microphone no matter what, and they told me, well, we can only let you use the microphone after 9:30 p.m.
because of the
improv classes, and they didn't want us making too much noise. And I was like, well, that's not gonna work for me because no one's ever gonna come to 9:30 p.m. open mic here at the improv, and so I thought, well, what if we just didn't use a microphone? Could we bring it earlier? And he came back to me like, yeah, we can do that. And so that kind of got the whole basis of how that format worked, was that's just me trying to get around the rules. Yeah. How do I make this work for me?
It's like a compromise too. I mean, it still works because it's like that room was so good because you didn't need a mic. I mean, as long as everyone was quiet, I mean,
and,
you know,
and it kind of like raised a challenge to the comedians. Yeah. Like, can you get this crowd's attention without the microphone? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are just by virtue of having a higher volume on your voice that gets attention. But would that work? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting. I thought that was weird the first time I'd went, but obviously you kind of forget about it after pretty quickly.
You'll see comedians holding beer bottles with a microphone, and just because they don't know what to do with their hands.
Ben Griffiths always did that. He would have a beer and just talk into it.
Sorry. He would talk into the lantern, and I'd get the best photos out of it because the lighting was great. Yeah. So I appreciated him doing
that. Was the 3 minutes was that just because there's so many people, or was it just like, all right, 3 minutes of new stuff per person for a reason?
Well, I told myself I'm not running this mic for longer than 90 minutes.
Okay.
So you start doing the division math on there. And there's different philosophies on that, and that's cool too. But at an open mic, I really only got about 3 minutes of listening to somebody talk. After unless they're killing it, there's been times where people killed it, and I just let the clock go. I didn't care. But more often than not, what you need to work on, if it's all new material, you got about 3 minutes of it, and that's about it. Sometimes just 4 minutes feels like an eternity. If someone's bombing, that extra minute is just an eternity that I could do without.
Well, I always find, like, you know how it is. I mean, you get through, and you're like, all right, I did that good. Let me try this other one. And then you're like, oh, I screwed up that last minute. Damn, dude. If it wasn't just for, like, if sets were all 3 minutes.
Right.
you should, like, sometimes just run out
it's
of steam.
Kind of seems like a magic number in a way. Because how many jokes would you guys say that is? I mean, you could probably do at least 3 jokes.
One per minute.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
Maybe more, but.
Depends on how you're defining joke.
Yeah.
More beats. Would you say more beats?
Yeah, I think you could probably cover 3 topics and get a couple of beats per if you're really efficient, if you really know what you're doing.
That's like average, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the hourglasses on Amazon sold like there were 3 minutes and 5 minutes.
Oh,
and
that was
1 minute, and 1 minute felt a little too short, so we went 3 minutes.
I always like that too. I forget about that, but you had the hourglass thing, which was a perfect timer to deal that you could just look and see exactly how much was left.
And every single open mic you go to, there's a guy in the back with a light, and it's a weird little secret between him and the comedian that the time has passed. And I thought, what if we didn't do that? What if everybody knows that this Joker is done?
Community accountability.
Everyone can stare this guy down because they know all of his sand is out of his hourglass. And he's still talking like he's got time, but he doesn't.
They're engaged. No, they're waiting.
They're staring a hole in you, waiting for you to get off so they can get up and have other people stare at them.
But yeah, obviously.
And wait for them to get off.
Wait for them to get off.
Yeah, like all
it's
of
my
these...
turn for people to wait for me to get off.
Somebody's getting off here.
Somebody. It's not the guy on stage.
I think it was a very successful mic because I think it goes into all these, you know, you've been doing running mics for so long and you've learned all these different things. It's like, well, you did it this way for a long time and it's like, well, that was dumb, or, you know, that you didn't like that, so you wanted to do these things. So I feel like it was a good like lineup of all these different tips and things that you've developed. So it's very cool.
But speaking definitely, of tips, do you like with your length of time in comedy and in Oklahoma, I think that kind of dictates a little bit more, because I don't think, was there much before, as much stuff to do before as there is now?
That's
like
a good,
open
that's
mics and
opportunities
sets and,
even.
Yeah. I've seen it kind of come and go. Mm-hmm. Othello's has always been a through line. JJ's open mic has always been a through line. There was a club when I started and there's a club now. Mm-hmm. They're not the same one,
right,
but that's okay. it's in flux.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember a time when James Nim was running Othello's and most people wouldn't, I don't, and the stage was on the other side of the room.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Were you not there for when Othello's burned down?
I've heard the story. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. There was a time before the Othello's burned down and the whole layout of the place was completely different.
Oh, I had no idea.
Okay. Yeah. So that, you get older and older in the scene and no one remembers the way that the scene used to be except for you and a couple other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, 10 years ago, I was researching where to go.
Yeah.
And I found Othello's and JJ's, and I was like, I'll go to JJ's first because it's close.
Yeah. And then JJ's was the very first open mic I ever did.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Dude. Yeah. Well, how long ago? 13
years ago. It would be about 13 years ago.
Damn, that might have been you who laughed at me.
it might have been.
Yeah.
You were there.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
You made me quit comedy.
No.
No, but when I first started, I went to JJ's, and it was the night before my wedding. And,
was this a bachelor party or were you just hanging out?
It was just me and my brother. He flew in and we were like, all right, man, let's go. You're going to get married. Well, I was already with Liz. We had a baby.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, we're just doing it for make parents happy. And I think that with ceremony comes like, you know,
something. Yeah. Like that.
Most things are, if you believe in it, it is.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I believe in this marriage.
Yeah.
Right. So we're gonna do a ceremony. We're gonna light some candles, and we're gonna make a cake. You know what I'm saying?
You're gonna bring the government in on it.
Yeah.
So they can tax us properly.
Yeah.
But that being said, I went out the night before, and I was like super nervous about. Yeah. Oh, I wasn't nervous, but I was just like, man, we got like shit to do tomorrow.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to fuck up. Liz, we paid $8,000 to go. You know, that's not a lot, but for us it was.
Yeah,
and Dave was there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was nice. It was at the Skirvin.
Yeah, it was small.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got them. Like, they messed up, and I'm going to tell you this right now. Gotcha, Skirvin. But they messed up and put the wrong number. It was supposed to be more.
Really?
Yeah, and the lady was new, and so on the contract, she put the wrong. It was supposed to be like $12,000.
Yeah.
But she was like, well, it was on a day that nobody wanted. It was like a Tuesday or something.
Yeah, I remember it being on Monday afternoon.
Intentionally. Yeah. So it was cheaper. But then she came back and was like, hey, just to let you know, this isn't a price that we can really give this away at. Da, 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 da. Liz was like, we already have the contract.
Yeah. It was like,
so we'll see you on the
14th.
Good for her.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
But that being said, we
had the open mic.
At JJ's. Yes. Okay. So I was there with my brother, and then I was like, well, I'll go up, you know, just to kind of get rid of these jitters. I went up, nothing. I didn't have nothing. I was just like, let me just go talk on this mic. I'll jump off if that sucked.
Yeah.
And I did good, you know, shot in the dark, 10% chance, got it. You know, I was like, and then they were laughing, clapping. I was like, yeah, all right. Walked away, got married, went on the honeymoon. I was, spent the whole time writing. I was like, oh, I'm obviously the best. And then I went back up. And I bombed my ass off. And
as it should be.
The guy that was in glasses with a beard.
That would be Sam Scovel.
Is it really?
Sam, did he have one of his fingers was missing?
I didn't look.
Okay.
It wouldn't be the first thing
the
I
guy
noticed.
If he's hosting the JJ's open mic at that time period, you're probably describing Sam Scovel.
But I said something, and it wasn't even like he did anything. It was he just laughed at my, like, oh shit, this is happening. You know what I'm saying? When somebody's like, oh God. You know? And I didn't know what that, I thought, oh, I'm messing it. So I just,
like,
left.
You didn't know any other comedians either.
No, I didn't know any. I was just showed up. I was like, where do I sign up? Can I get a beer?
You know? Like, yeah, there you had, I think that's what's nice about the community now. It's like, I mean, at least from what I see anyways, it's like, it's, you know, more welcoming. And it's like, if you're in the community, it's kind of easier to, I mean, that's something we like to do on this podcast, is to show, if you're brand new to comedy, watch our show, you'll learn something, meet some, hopefully,
yeah,
find
yeah.
people to meet.
Well, Leo was my guy.
Yeah.
Leo, he was like, hey, man, you know, he's like nice. You know, he's running JJ's. I was like, I don't know what to do. He's like, come on, buddy.
Yeah.
yeah. And that
so
was,
that was when you got back into it.
That's when I came back 10 years later.
Yeah.
Wow.
yeah. I was
a whole
like,
10 years past.
I was mimicking. I was like, how do I get good? I was like, well, I'll just mimic Doug Stanhope, like mm-hmm. mimic his act
right.
like in the living room, just like, and you can't because that's mm-hmm. not me.
Yeah.
Now that I realize, it's like, oh, yeah.
yeah,
that's
but,
not me.
And that's a and people they get a lot of shade on new comics for aping some other comic
yeah.
style, and it's like, well, how else are you going to
yeah.
learn how to do this crap?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just
mm-hmm.
I feel like the just comedy in general should probably be a little bit more forgiving
mm-hmm.
of people just ripping other people off wholesale. and I think they're I don't want to veer us too far off topic here. Whatever, it's a comedy it's a podcast.
Yeah,
but yeah, just. Yeah, if I could give advice to anybody
mm-hmm.
watching, rip people off, man.
Yeah.
Just rip them off. Like, comedy-wise, not money-wise.
yeah.
Just rip off material. Steal
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Just do talk like them. Do the Mark Norman
yeah.
voice. Do it. Just do it.
I think,
whatever.
Yeah. It's something with music, right? I think the differences, I think a lot about the similarities and differences between, you know, comedy music or any performance thing. But it's like music, nobody gets mad when you get up and play a cover song. You know what I mean?
If anything, they prefer you to play cover. as soon as you're done with your Oasis cover, it's like, now I'm going to play one
yeah.
of my songs. Like, everyone's like, okay, we got to.
But it's like, but it's so important. I mean, I definitely, when I first learned how to play bass, I was looking up Queen bass lines on the internet and learning those, how to play that, because I didn't know how to play the bass at all. So it's like,
yeah.
how are you supposed to learn anything unless you emulate someone else that you like? So I think that is interesting, and I think that because you said that, I like that when the Will Rogers quotes and the Rodney Dangerfield stuff, it's like that would be a good idea for new comics that like maybe have an open mic for specifically brand new comics, that like you're allowed to do that to get something, get under your feet and feel like learn what it feels like to do this. So,
yeah. Well, even the idea of like, this is my joke that I wrote
mm-hmm.
is kind of dubious at best. It's like, nah,
yeah.
bro, it's some drunk guy yelled that at
right.
you one time
and
you remembered
right.
it, and now you're saying it on stage and everyone's laughing like you said it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, with the music analogy,
mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it like this. Like, if you're a guitarist, I mean, easy, you can steal a song, right?
Sure.
But you can use licks.
Yeah.
And licks are just
yeah.
common things that we all use, like, you know, a dick joke.
Right.
You know, this is this lick, this is this phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
And if I use it with this string of, then now it's mine. You
yeah.
know?
Change it. You know, you just have to change it. Like, what is it, 80% or 90%?
Well, I mean, there's Jeff Beck licks that people
yeah,
use,
exactly.
and it's just considered like, oh, that's Jeff. I can hear
right.
Jeff Beck in this
yeah.
musician.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear Rodney Carrington in this comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear Louis Andrews. I can hear Sinbad in Nick Campbell.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
yeah. Get out of there. No, but I do. Mine is like Louis Anderson, Sinbad, and Chad Daniels. That's where I like to live,
mm-hmm.
is like this, like, not that I intend to.
Right.
Or intentional.
Yeah.
I'll watch other comedians, and if I find something I really
yeah.
like, I'll watch it over and over again, and I may even take it on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Just mannerisms and,
yeah.
and dynamics of voice. And then go, oh, I like that, or I didn't like that hat. I won't wear that one again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you should have heard my Cat Williams. That was pretty good.
Everyone, yeah, every comedian had a Cat Williams phase.
Yeah.
At least once, man. It's like the, yeah, like, I don't want to talk too much shit on Cat Williams, but kind of like the Limp Bizkit
yeah.
of comedians. Like
yeah.
there's a Limp Bizkit song you like. We can
mm-hmm.
all talk shit on Limp Bizkit, but there's a song you liked it when it came out.
For sure.
Yeah, dude.
If you're a white dude like us. Like, it's just.
What was that one where he was in like a button up shirt and he had his hat down low and he was just like.
It was like, yeah, I think I know what you're talking
about.
It was
about. On Hot Dog Flavored Water. It was the video that got me. I was like, dude, I'm brooding too.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's like, it was very dark and
skin
like,
your ass raw.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, Limp Bizkit is at the heart of all white people, I think. A little
something,
bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really tapped into what was happening.
I did it all for the nookie.
I was there for it.
Yeah. Wasn't it intro for some wrestlers too? Like,
oh, you're talking about the Undertaker, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Undertaker would come out riding a motorcycle to, no, which, what was this?
It?
They're going to revoke my wrestling fan card for not knowing what song it came out to. But yeah, it was a whole thing. It was a whole thing.
So it was in the culture zeitgeist, like, kind of, whenever we were younger.
It was the song where they had to, like, dance like they're driving a big steering wheel. I forget.
Rolling.
Thank you. Just ladies in the back. Ladies in the background, giant steering wheel. Just keep rolling. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Who would have thought that would have been a blast from the past? Yeah, Butt Rock was pretty cool back then. Papa Roach, Drowning
Kid
Pool.
Kid Rock. I remember talking about him recently, about his music specifically, nothing else.
he was in town.
Oh, was he? Oh, okay. Yeah, remember? Yeah, that's probably why.
Anytime that Kid Rock comes up, I bring up that you need, like, listeners, get on Google and look up the guy, the Colostomy Bag Kid Rock Restaurant. Just put those words in. And the store, there was a Kid Rock's big ass bar and grill in downtown Nashville.
Yeah,
there is a homeless person who started a fight inside or outside. We had a taxi driver tell this to us, and then we looked up the story, and goddamn, it was true. The cops were trying to get a hold of him, and he lifts up his shirt and pulls out a call out. He has a bag collecting it, and he just starts swinging it, and it is splashing all over. Yeah.
Oh.
Kid Rock was not there at the time, unfortunately. But it's just
but when he was there, same feeling.
Yeah, just getting everywhere on everybody and everything.
I have nothing against Skid Rock, just his music. The kidding.
I think it's more the opposite. The music can go either way, but him as a person.
Ball to ball, come on, man. Okay.
Yeah, I think we're about an hour.
Hey, that's not too bad. That's not too bad.
I got to talk about, like, I knew things about comedy, which is so funny because you guys are talking to me like I'm an expert. I never drew a damn dime in this business.
Yeah.
You know, I did this thing.
I think there's always stuff to learn about people that have been doing it a long time, though. That's the thing. It's like the thing about comedy I always thought was interesting is, like, yeah, I feel like you have to be doing comedy for at least 5 years before you can. I mean, I'd say it's like you get to like a middle level at 5 years, even. You know what I mean? So it's like it's just the longevity of it is so important.
Yeah, I think there's something about that. Someone will tell you 5 years, someone will tell you seven years, but it takes a certain amount of years to kind of get your bearings.
Yeah,
and to stop aping other people's styles and start talking like the person that you are. You
develop your own. Real true style for sure.
Yeah. So I'd say that's a good time frame. Mm-hmm. If you're 2 years in and you don't have a good grasp on it, you're in good company. I think that's about the way it works.
For sure. So yeah, I mean, that's why. And there's not a lot of people around here. I don't know very many comics that have been doing it as long as you. You know what I mean? I could say probably on one hand the comics that I know personally that have been doing it that long.
Yeah. Have y'all had James Nim on this mic yet? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we had him. Yeah, he's a good friend. Yeah.
Well, there's one that kind of stepped away and then went into music. Yeah, like he does a little bit here and there.
Yeah, he's always kind of doing his own thing. Yeah. He's finding some new projects to get into.
He's always, one of the most creative people I know and just different, creative avenues.
Yeah, writer, musician, comedian.
Yeah, and then we'll hang out and he'll tell me he's homebrewing a fighting game. I'm like, you're doing
Oh,
what?
Yeah,
that's
I think
so cool.
I think I heard about
that. Yeah, I remember that.
So he's the man, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think whenever I talk to most older veterans in the scene, very old. The
it happens. If you're lucky.
Dude, I'm 37. I got
man.
I'm on three years away from 38. I'm actually two years away.
I was just thinking that too, because we're like a month apart.
Yeah.
Age.
So me and Dave are almost dead.
2 years from 40.
Yeah.
So what I was getting at was, when you talk to the older cats, it's what I can gather is it's really protect the love of it.
Yeah.
Almost. Yeah. It's like this idea of, like, I think you do get, fortunately I've been able to talk to a bunch of people. This has given me, and then you guys are so nice. Everybody I pretty much talked to, Julie, Brad, Chad, obviously a bunch of others, but the ones that I have got, it's kind of this attitude of you got to do it 'cause you love it. Brian Stevens, that was one of the things he said, he's like, if we were out at Comedy on the Spot, we didn't at the beginning we didn't have a good crowd, but I went and barked and we were able to get it. So when he came in, he was like, I was like, ah, man, there's not a lot of people here, and he was like, dude. It's like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know? It's like, he's like, I'm just here to do comedy. It's going to be fun no matter what. I was like, and then I, you know, at the time it was, we were starting. So it was like kind of paltry pay, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went up, I gave him his money and he was just like, I was like, man, I wish I could give you more. You were so funny. And he was just like, if you're doing it for money, you're doing it for the wrong reasons, you know? And I just was like, I love that attitude. And that I kind of tried to, because no matter what, man, I can't pay for the amount of fun I'm having.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if I sit there and put the importance on the money, it takes away from that, for me, that fun for me. And not, now I don't want to be taken advantage of either. You know, I think that's where it comes from.
And absolutely, the rewards that come to you in stand-up comedy can become a trap. I ran open mics. One of the reasons why I stopped running open mics is because I stopped drinking. Every open mic that I ran, the bar, you know, you got to be cool with the bartender, because if the bartender's not cool with the show, you're not going to have a show. Something's going to happen. The show's going to get canceled. You got to make sure that you're cool with the bartender. And when you're cool with the bartender, or the bartender's cool with you, well, he hands you a free drink, you know? And it's like, well, it'd be silly not to drink this free drink. It's like leaving money on the table. And I'm not getting paid anyway.
That's a part of your payment.
It's a part of my paycheck is this beer they're handing me. So if they're handing me three, well, I'm going to drink three.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're doing that. And I had a hustle where I was hosting bar bingo and bar trivia. And so every night of the week, I was in a bar.
Yeah.
And bartenders that I was cool with were handing me drinks. And you get trapped by those rewards. You know, I never got trapped by the money.
Yeah.
Luckily, that temptation stayed away from me. But I made enough to pay bills and whatnot. But at the end of the day, what I really had to get away from was the drinking.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you know, like kind of said, when I walked away from the mic that I walked away from, it's just because, like, it's the things that were really fun kind of weren't feeling fresh to me. And that's, when that funk starts setting in, you know, take a look around, start taking account of what's happening. That, for me, it was let's try something else out. Try something else.
You pass the torch, like, you're like, all right, I did enough here. No. Somebody else take this.
No, the idea of a mic called It's New running for 10 years just makes the punk rocker in me says no. No, there's not going to be an old ass mic called It's New. I'm also ready to like go to an open mic that someone's running in that space and see how it works. I want to see your cool weird ass idea. I want to sign up for your weird ass mic.
Well, your personality is portrayed through the shows that you're even producing. You know, like, yours is very much you. I think that, you know, our comedy on the spot lends well to
what you guys
what we're doing, me and Liz. And then, you know, you go do Bricktown, that's very professional. You get there putting, I think that the local scene, perfect example, Martin Dupress. Everything
good
they
stuff
do
right now.
Everything
their shows rule.
And making a movie, you know.
Absolutely.
Super creative.
Okay, I want to ask you this.
I
want to say this too. I believe that the experience that you have and the fact that you are a veteran in our scene is very important, you know, and saying that you feel, or when you said you didn't think that, you guys are asking me, you know, everything I've seen, you're the person to ask, right?
I appreciate
that. I really appreciate you as a comedian. That being said, if you were to give someone advice when they say their first year, second year, from where you are now, what would you tell them? Five points, if you can get them.
5 points. I don't know if I'll do a top five, but I can give you a couple. Definitely, like, the sooner you can start running your own shows, the better. Because I'm sure a new comic will be bitching about, how come I'm not getting booked? Well, you're not getting booked because you're not booking people. When you start booking people, and that's a real cop. Like, that sometimes I've seen that get used as a cop out. When someone's like, "Why am I not getting booked?" Like, "Oh, you do your own show." But also, there's some truth to that. Not everyone can run their own show.
Something I say all the time, for me personally, just a quick, is like creating your own opportunities. You know what I mean? Like, especially for music, it's like nobody's giving people music opportunities out there. I mean, there's a couple, but not enough. So it's like you have to just create it yourself, you know what I mean? Like, with your, you know, running your own shows, for sure.
Run your own shows. Write some kind of writing practice, some kind of daily writing practice. says me to myself, read difficult books, read almost, you know, like an athlete would be lifting weights. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking for a living, you need to be lifting some thinking weights. Yeah. Like read some philosophy, read some tough nonfiction shit. And when it is fiction, read the hard stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. Don't punish yourself, but definitely stretch yourself and, you're going to make mistakes. If you're new to it, you're going to fuck shit up. You're going to hurt people's feelings. You're going to do all the things that you said you weren't going to do. You're going to do them. And just a little bit of forgiveness for that. It's going to go a long way.
Yeah, dude. I love that. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I'm running into now. It's like, all right, I've talked about my family. I've talked about my life. Obviously, I haven't dug that deep, but it's like, what am I saying? Is it important? Yeah. Like, or it shouldn't be. It doesn't matter. It's comedy. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's like, is there enough in here to keep? So you have to feed that. It's kind of what you're taking in.
And I'll catch myself on Reddit all goddamn day. And just like, I've been listening. I've been reading Bots and Dummies all day. I could have pulled out some philosophy. I could have pulled out some a whole shelf full of books I could have pulled out to read. And I don't know. And it's silly. Everyone's going to forget you someday. Mm-hmm. So just, get your reward now. Yeah.
Get your reward now. Yeah, I'm going to write that one down too. Get your reward now.
Yeah.
Definitely good. Like I said earlier, it's just about the journey. You have to appreciate the journey as it is, because there's really nothing at the end. Ultimately.
Dude, I've been getting into D&D lately. Just like, I don't even like not even playing with other people. Just listening to people do it on podcasts.
Okay. There's a new podcast we can shout out. Is Olivia Lycan and Martin Pross and some other people. I haven't watched it yet, but they're doing a D&D YouTube thing.
That's okay. Cool.
Yeah, all that's right. Cool. I'm gonna load that up.
It's on Queen Versus the podcast, but they have a YouTube channel, so go follow them.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
I didn't even watch it. They've done like two episodes. I think it's every Wednesday. Yeah. So
bro, the one I'm right now is Dungeons and Daddies, and it was made in 2017, and I've got all this backlog of it's just me in an attic listening to five people just play D&D, and it's super funny because it's very improv.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm loving about it is like. And I've been taking that mentality, because what they'll do is they'll, like, you know, the DM will say something and then they'll take on the persona of, and then try to play with, and the other people will play too. And that's, play is very important. Mm-hmm. Play is very important in that. It's like, it's not writing or it has to be funny. Right. It just ends up there because of the craziness that it is. That being said, I've been watching a lot of D&D and it's been bleeding in. I want to write more about it. You know, you get obsessed. And so I've also been playing Baldur's Gate. I'm not bragging. I got a PS5. but I don't play with people as much as it's just for a better understanding of them playing while I'm listening, you know?
And maybe that's kind of opening the door up for, like, somewhere down the line, you're going to find that group of D&D players and you're going to, you're going to lock right in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I've... You need to play. It's one thing to listen to a podcast, but you got to play some real D&D. I think you'd dig it.
I've got all the books. Like I've had them for 5 years. I've been waiting for my kids to get old enough.
Yeah.
Well, if it's like comedy, in another 5 years, you'll be great at it.
Yeah. That's I'm just in there. Well, I love stats. I love a good stat.
That's literally the thing that keeps me away from D&D. Is just the number game of it. Right. Just like, I don't like what dice am I rolling? Like, no, you have to roll the 12-sided dice because it's some kind of. It's like, I don't.
Too many rules.
Well, now they have an app. Yeah. So
it
does the map beyond D&D. Roll20.com.
Good.
I say that it's like there's a living aspect too. There's a living aspect where you, and sometimes I wouldn't think, like, normally I would do this and not try to write jokes about it. I would just be like, all right, well, nobody's gonna want to hear about that.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that you're obsessing about is the thing that you got, because you you know the details. You know the ins and outs, and then that way you know how to associate it to the world to bring it to them.
Yeah.
You know, because what's the hero's journey, right? What's the story of the hero's journey? Getting information or a thing or experience and bringing it back to the culture I brought us a thing.
Or
right? And so I'm going to do that with D&D.
Dude, I mean, a D&D comedy show, it'd be a lot of things to keep on rails, but I mean, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, we could definitely do it. We have the equipment here. Even we could do a YouTube show like that. we just need to get a dungeon master, somebody that knows the game.
Get a dungeon master.
Yeah.
Well, what if we get like a roll 20, like you roll a d20,
yeah,
and then that is the difficulty of riff that you have to do. Like a d1 is critical fail, right?
Yeah.
So that's just like Elon Musk and the Tesla's. You know? And d20 is like, you're a dick. You know? No, I don't know.
Yeah,
or maybe it's the opposite. That may be.
You'd have to figure it out and see. All
right. Well, Matt Rainey, we're going to do this. We're going to build this together. We're going to build the D&D open mic. Yeah.
I gave you four things. I got a fifth one. Fifth one. The folks that you meet on your way up, or the folks that you meet on your way down.
Yeah.
and vice versa, that. Man. Like the guy that'll clown on you one time, you'll see him just eat shit in the biggest situation possible, and you just, I don't know, you if you stick around in comedy, you'll witness it.
Yeah.
You'll see it.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, what's the future for Matt? What maybe you're not doing comedy, but yeah. I heard that you're doing orchestra stuff.
Yes, I'm doing stuff that's not comedy, and you can't find it on Instagram or social media because I'm not posting it. But yeah, I'm learning classical bass, the big one with the giant bow. I'm doing that. It's slow going. I'm driving RC cars. I'm not taking photos of it, so you can't like the photo, but you just have to like the thought of me driving it.
Where you go, you have to go to the park and find you.
You gotta, yeah, come out to Memorial Park. You might catch me.
Yeah,
like, trying to,
yeah, dude.
But yeah, I'm just trying to yeah, try.
Just
I'm
live
gonna,
a little.
I'm gonna go, yeah, have some experiences, and then I'll be back at the open.
That's
mic.
Something about comedy, right? It's like you have to live life to have something to talk about on stage.
So,
sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm it's always crazy to me, these the famous 18, 19 year old stand-up comics who are just getting so much ground. It's like, how, what do they have to talk about?
Yeah.
And you'll watch it, and it's great, it's slick, it's polished, it's there, but also it's just like, he's a 19 year old dummy.
They don't have a life. They haven't lived life yet, for sure.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're just at your house and you're like, I can't see Matt online. Right. Just know he's out there living his best life.
I'm doing shit. It's cool.
Playing with RC cars and bowing the shit out of a bass, man. I love that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just know I'm out there having a good time.
I'm reading some books. It's all good.
Yeah,
it's
man.
It's all good.
All right.
Yo, I had so much fun doing this.
Dude, thanks, man. Thanks for doing
this. This is a
blast, man. We really appreciate it. And
thank
you for giving us so much insight.
Yeah, and everybody, don't follow Matt online because you can't. So.
If you want to, you can follow It's New Open Mic on Instagram. You took some really good photos of our last mic, and I've been meaning to post those up there. So that might be like the final post for It's New. It's still worth following. Still worth following. Hey Rainey, I'm kind of done with that. Is my Instagram handle. I just want to be done with social media for a minute.
So if you
want
to get a hold of Matt, here's his telephone number, and here's his address.
I'm an easy guy to find.
You'll be around, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
thanks, guys. We appreciate you. Be sure to subscribe and like and all the things. And be sure to email us with any questions you have, and we will get back with you on here. You can ask us anything you want, and we will answer somewhat truthfully.
quick shout out to Salem. He told me that you guys were talking about my mic on this podcast. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And he listens to this podcast. Yeah. So now if you're listening to me, I'm listening to you, Salem. Hello.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye.